up to now, we had considered the problem of the quadrature and the grid representation in 1D. In this section now, we want to turn to multidimensional grid representations and extend our discussion to ND. Actually, if we use a direct product representation, this is pretty straightforward. Then we can take our multidimensional basis functions and just write them as a product of basis functions in all F coordinates. So we have the basis set index n for each of the coordinates and one-dimensional basis sets depending on the F coordinates. So this implies that the basis grid transform can also be written as a direct product and done independently in each degree of freedom. So we can have our grid states as direct product of grid states in each coordinate. So our grid is just a direct product grid of F one-dimensional grids. And the basis grid transformation, each matrix elements here written with super indices I and N. Again, super index N is just the collection of all indices in I bis N F. The same for I, being the collection of I1, I2 to IF. Then the transformation, the elements of the transformation matrix, capital Xi I, capital Phi N, are just given as a product of the transformation matrices in each degree of freedom. So if we now consider the basis grid transform, so we take our wave function and want to represent it in the grid basis. This can be written as the taking the expansion coefficients times the original basis functions, scalar product with the new grid basis functions, summed over all basis functions. So that's just inserting psi being sum n1 to nf phi n a n into the above equation. And then this transformation matrix can be just decomposed into a product of 1D transformation matrices. And we can apply the transformation sequentially. By considering that this A is just an A, N1, N2 to NF, then we take the last factor, so we multiply with the 1D matrices, transformation matrices in the F coordinate, doing just this sum over NF, this factor times A, and we get a new matrix element which has now no longer the basis index in the last degree of freedom because this is kind of gone, but the grid index in the last coordinate because we did the 1D transformation, the basis to grid transform in the last coordinate. And we can then do the last but one coordinate and so on. So we can sequentially transform one index after the other from basis to grid. The consequence is essentially enormous. If you have a 1D basis, size capital N, then, of course, the transformation in one coordinate implies that I have a dependence on all remaining coordinates, f minus one coordinate. So there are n to the power of f minus one indices in all the other coordinates. And I have a vector matrix multiplication in one coordinate having two indices, IF and NF. So in total, I have F plus one indices, and the effort of the transformation in one index is capital N to the F plus one. And I have to do them in all coordinates. So I have a numerical effort, which is F times N to the power of F plus one. So F times N times the complete basis set size, capital N to the power of F. If I'm comparing this with the direct multiplication of two matrices of the size N to the power of F, the effort would be matrix dimension squared, so N to the power of F squared, so N to the power of 2F. So while the effort for the full matrix multiplication would scale as the square of the total basis, the effort of the sequential transformation scales almost linearly with the total basis set size. It scales with total basis set size times basis set size in 1D times number of coordinates, so almost linearly. Actually, this trick of partitioning the full matrix multiply in sequential matrix multiplies is also used in the derivation of the fast Fourier transform scheme. So what I mentioned before in the last section with the efficiency of the fast Fourier transform essentially relies on the same trick of decomposing a big matrix multiplication into sequential products of smaller matrices. So we can consider this, for example, for the application of the Hamiltonian in the DVR representation. So we take our Fourier wave function and represent it in grid space using the grid states and corresponding expansion functions, and we want to apply a Hamiltonian, which for simplicity is written just as the sum of the kinetic energy operators in all coordinates. So for example, using kind of minus h bar over 2m ddx squared in each coordinate x1 to xf plus the potential. We then consider the wave function, apply the Hamiltonian to it, and represent it in the grid space basis. Then this can be written as applying T1, we have, okay, sum over all grid points in 1 here, and having, because T1 only acts in x1, I just have a matrix in the first coordinate for T. From this, T2 give rise to a matrix acting in the second coordinate, and IF gives, TF gives rise to a matrix acting, oh, this should be 2 and F in the last coordinate. And of course, my potential is diagonal in the grid representation. So here, again, I get the saving in the effort because I have for the potential just the diagonal multiply. And to apply the kinetic energy operator in this grid representation, I have F terms giving a matrix vector product in 1D only. So again, the capital N to the F plus 1 dependency. So I can either use the direct product structure to reduce the effort of the basis grid transform and evaluate everything in the basis, or I can do it directly in the grid representation using the fact that my kinetic energy operator can just be written as a sum of 1D operators. So there are plenty of ways to use this nice structure, and what I want to really point out in the end, that really this essentially direct product based decomposition of the matrix vector product is what makes calculations for systems with more than only 2 or 3 degrees of freedom numerically feasible. And with this, I want to close this section of the lecture.